Welcome to an excerpt of the CME activity, Turn Off the TV, Get Outside and Play, Physical Activity as a Lifestyle, which is certified by Medscape and presented by Kirsten K. Davison, Ph.D., Russell R. Pate, Ph.D., and Deborah Rome Young, Ph.D. Dr. Davison is an associate professor, Department of Nutrition, Harvard School of Public Health, Boston, Massachusetts. Dr. Davison has disclosed no relevant financial relationships. Dr. Davison does not intend to discuss off-label uses of drugs, mechanical devices, biologics, or diagnostics approved by the FDA for use in the United States. Dr. Davison does not intend to discuss investigational drugs, mechanical devices, biologics, or diagnostics not approved by the FDA for use in the United States. Dr. Pate is a professor, Department of Exercise Science, University of South Carolina, Columbia, South Carolina. Dr. Pate has disclosed the following relevant financial relationships. He served as an advisor or consultant for Kraft Foods. Dr. Pate does not intend to discuss off-label uses of drugs, mechanical devices, biologics, or diagnostics approved by the FDA for use in the United States. Dr. Pate does not intend to discuss investigational drugs, mechanical devices, biologics, or diagnostics not approved by the FDA for use in the United States. Dr. Rome Young is a professor and chair, Department of Epidemiology and Biostatistics, University of Maryland, College Park, Maryland. Dr. Rome Young has disclosed no relevant financial relationships. Dr. Rome Young does not intend to discuss off-label uses of drugs, mechanical devices, biologics, or diagnostics approved by the FDA for use in the United States. Dr. Rome Young does not intend to discuss investigational drugs, mechanical devices, biologics, or diagnostics not approved by the FDA for use in the United States. The purpose of this activity is to review strategies to encourage physical activity among children in schools, families, and communities. This activity is supported by Sanford Health. To participate in the CME activity, please go to medscape.org/features/audio and select the title.
Hello, I'm Russell Pate. I'm a professor of exercise science at the University of South Carolina in Columbia. I'd like to welcome you to this roundtable discussion titled Turn Off the TV, Get Outside and Play, Physical Activity as a Lifestyle. This program is part of the Children's Health, Fitness, and Nutrition Initiative, which is a collaboration between Medscape and Sanford Health and provides a comprehensive online curriculum on childhood obesity. With me today are Deborah Rome Young, who's a professor in the Department of Epidemiology and Biostatistics at the University of Maryland, and Kirsten Davison, Associate Professor of Nutrition at the Harvard School of Public Health. Welcome to both of you, Debbie and Kirsten. I'd like to begin the program by reviewing the health benefits of physical activity in children and adolescents. I was honored to serve on the advisory committee that did preliminary work leading up to the release of the first U.S. physical activity guidelines, 2008, and that group concluded that there were very important linkages between physical activity and health in kids. The group concluded that there was strong evidence linking higher levels of physical activity to better fitness, both cardiorespiratory endurance and muscular fitness, better body composition, which is really the topic for discussion today, improved bone health, improved cardiovascular and metabolic health biomarkers, and moderately strong evidence to link higher levels of physical activity to better mental health, reduced symptoms of anxiety and depression. Our focus today is on physical activity and prevention of overweight in youth. clearly a critical issue given the tremendously high prevalence of overweight that we currently see in American children. There are important scientific studies that link higher levels of physical activity to better body composition, lower levels of fatness. And these studies come in different broad categories. First, there is cross-sectional evidence linking higher levels of activity and fitness with lower levels of body fatness. For example, this study from Europe, from the European Heart Study, shows that in the most active kids, body fat levels are lower than in the less active groups of children observed in that large-scale study. In addition, there are prospective observational studies linking higher levels of activity to healthier development of body composition in children, and this is an area where we need more science, but there are certainly important studies now. And one was undertaken as a part of the Iowa Bone Development Study, and that study demonstrated that for both boys and girls, levels of moderate to vigorous physical activity observed in five-year-olds predicted the rate at which kids gained fat mass over the coming years, between the ages of 8 and 11. And essentially what this study demonstrated is that the kids that were the most active earlier in their childhood gained weight at the lowest rates as they developed through childhood and headed toward adolescence. In addition, there are important experimental studies in which exercise treatments have been tested, and important work was done by Bob Gutten and colleagues at the Medical College of Georgia over a period of years, examining the effects of after-school programs that placed heavy emphasis on kids participating in moderate to vigorous physical activity, and substantial doses of vigorous activity were provided as well. The intervention aimed to include 80 minutes of physical activity, with half of that in vigorous activity during each program session. And the kids in this study attended at a high frequency, and actual attendance in the program was at 44% of target over a fairly extended period. And what they observed was that when the kids were involved in this after-school program, they essentially gained weight at a normal rate, whereas kids in the control group that were not included in this program gained at a greater weight. Interestingly enough, the kids that were in the intervention group gained weight during the summer when the program was not active at a much greater rate than they did during the school year when they were involved in the program at a high frequency. This provides, I think, very important evidence that higher levels of activity are very likely to prevent excessive weight gain in children. As a result of this scientific evidence and much more, physical activity guidelines for Americans were released in 2008, and specific guidelines for children and adolescents were included in that important document. The guideline for kids ages 6 to 17 is that they should engage in physical activity for at least an hour a day, 60 minutes, and that hour of activity should emphasize participation in moderate or vigorous intensity physical activity. That's activity at an intensity associated with brisk walking or more intense than that, certainly including jogging and sports that place heavy emphasis on running. Included in that hour a day should be regular participation in vigorous activity, and that's recommended on at least 3 days per week. And in addition, it's recommended that kids should engage at least 3 days a week in muscle strengthening activity, and also 3 days a week in bone strengthening activity. We've learned in recent years that it's very important for kids to engage in bone loading exercise, because it's during childhood and adolescence that kids lay down bone, and it's a sort of a steady decline in bone mass after early adulthood. So the time for kids to optimize their bone development is during childhood. How are kids doing in terms of meeting that guideline? Well, the answer is not so well. The answer depends a bit on how you choose to measure physical activity. One way is to ask kids to self-report their physical activity, and that's the approach taken in the Youth Risk Behavior Survey. And we can see from the results of a recent administration of that survey, which is undertaken every other year in high school kids across the United States, that only about 20 to 25% of males and about half that, around 10% or so of high school girls, report meeting that 60-minute daily physical activity guideline. It's also possible to objectively measure physical activity in kids, and we're now using motion sensors called accelerometers. These are now being used in large-scale surveys, and it's been demonstrated in the recent National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey, NHANES, that quite small percentage of American children meet that 60-minute physical activity guideline. It's only the youngest children, those between the ages of 6 and 11, in which about half of kids meet that standard. And if we subdivide that age group, it really is only the very youngest kids, those in the 6 to 8 bracket, where significant numbers of kids meet that 60-minute guideline. So there's a problem. Most American kids are not meeting the public health recommendation for physical activity, and we need to understand what we can do to change that. There's certainly been a lot of research over recent decades aimed at understanding why some kids are more physically active than others. And there are certainly a number of factors that have been identified. Among them is a psychological construct called physical activity self-efficacy, which is a child's sense of competence or confidence in his or her ability to be physically active. Not surprisingly, enjoyment of physical activity is known to be important. Kids are drawn to activities they enjoy and that they can engage in enjoyably with their friends, with peers, and so enjoyment of physical activity is important. Parental support, which we'll be discussing in detail today, is an important factor in influencing a child's physical activity. At the same time, it's known that limiting sedentary pursuits is an effective strategy for increasing physical activity, hence the title of our session today is Turn the TV Off and Get Outside, is clearly important guidance. The environment of the home is certainly important, and we have learned that kids who have access to sports equipment and a supportive physical environment in and around their home are more active than those that don't. And time spent outdoors is a factor of increasing interest right now. We're concerned that way too many kids spend way too much time inside, where they're much more likely to be inactive and exposed to screen time, whereas if they're outside, we know that they're much more likely to be physically active. The scientific community and the practice communities have been very active in trying to learn ways to promote physical activity. And interventions have been tested and mounted in a number of settings. School is certainly the setting which has been studied the most. We'll be discussing that one today. Clearly, the home environment exerts a critical influence on children's health behavior, physical activity included. And we'll be discussing the home environment as well. In addition, efforts have been mounted at the community level, in healthcare settings, and through mass media. And there are some success stories in each of those settings. And We'll also be trying to link those to our discussion today. Now I'd like to turn to Dr. Young, to Debbie, who will be discussing physical activity in the school environment. Debbie?
Thanks, Russ. So I thought I would start this morning speaking about the preschool environment. That's one of the school environments that we have less information about. But about 65% of 3 to 5 year olds spend time in a center-based preschool. That could be some part of their week that they're being involved in that. Your group, actually, from South Carolina, did a study from on 24 preschools and did observations of what's going on in those actual preschools and found that when the kids are inside, 94% of the observed activity that's going on is sedentary. Common activities are things that you would expect. They take a nap, they have a snack, they transition from one group to another. But most of that time is spent being sedentary. In contrast, when they're outside, only 56% time of the is observed is was sedentary. So kids are in open space. There's equipment, balls, wheel toys like tricycles, lots of other things for them to be doing, and the kids are doing those things. The observations suggested that when the kids were physically active, and when I say that, I'm speaking about moderate to vigorous physical activity, of course. They tended to be child or initiated. So it wasn't the teachers that were typically initiating the kids to be physically active. It was the kids doing it themselves. They tended to be active when they were alone or when they were doing activities with just one other child. But when we teachers did get involved and tried to organize physical activities, the children did then become more active as well. So even though there was little encouragement for the teachers to be active, when they did, the kids were more active. And so this goes back to what you were saying before about the outdoor environment as being a key thing to look at. So what can be done in the preschool environment? Well, I think the first thing is to spend more time outside, just like you had already said. Larger open spaces per child, both the work from South Carolina and also from San Diego suggested that when there was more space available for each child, they tended to be more active. Now that can be hard to do in urban environments, but can be done simply as having fewer children go out to recess or to go outside at the same time. So instead of 20 kids going out at once, maybe 10 do, and so that even a small space, there's more space per child. Shorter recess periods, shorter times outside. So when children spend too much time outside, that physical activity tends to decline. So instead of having perhaps 30 minutes all at once, having 2 15-minute breaks will increase physical activity when they're outside. Having more types of activities, such as balls and wheel toys, will increase the activity when kids are either indoors or outdoors. Teachers prompting the children to be active is another thing that's important. And finally, there's been a lot of research done inside the preschool curriculum environment, and that the data suggests that when you integrate physical activity into the classroom curriculum, the kids respond and they are more active. But not enough of that is happening. So moving to the school environment, we can talk about physical education, which that's the first thing that people think about when they think about being active in school. But that's just one part of it. You also can think about before and after school activities. You can think about recess, also active commuting to school. So I'll be talking about quickly about a number of those. So let's start with physical education. So the national standards are that elementary school students get 150 minutes per week of PE, and that jumps up to 225 minutes a week for middle school and high school students. In 2006, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention conducted a school health policy and program survey. And in that survey, they surveyed both states, districts, and schools. they found that 76% of states either required or encouraged the standard of 150 minutes per week, elementary school, 225 minutes in middle and high school. However, only 4% of elementary schools, 8% of middle schools, and 2% of high schools met this standard. Another standard that is out there is that in PE class, kids should spend at least 50% of their time being active, and that hardly ever is met. We know from a lot of studies, including those that you and I have worked on before, is that when teachers are given good staff development and when good quality PE is offered, you can easily meet that 50% of MVPA in the PE class. All right, so what about recess? Only 12% of states require recess. Now, we've already talked about how being outdoors is good for physical activity. And then another 26% recommend it. The good side of that is about 3/4 of elementary schools actually do have recesses for all grades. So that's a good sign. Looking at policies related to walking or biking to school, only 14% of states have policies supporting that, and less than half of all schools support or promote walking to school or biking to school. Now, again, we have lots of data suggesting that children who walk to school or bike to school are more active overall compared with kids who are not. They don't compensate if they walk to school. They don't compensate for that later in the day and are less active overall, but they are more active. After-school sports, the good side is we all know everyone's high school pretty much. 91% of high schools have interscholastic sports. About 3/4 of middle schools have interscholastic sports as well. So there's a lot of sports programs out there that are offered through the school. However, the issue there is are the coaches trained to be delivering these programs for the kids? Well, only 50% of states require schools to have trained coaches. Again, that's another problem. So, what can be done? Well, as far as physical education goes, one thing is to implement the policies that the states have. The schools need to get on board with those policies. Implement quality PE. We know that that's successful. There are a number of well-designed curriculum programs out there that can increase the amount of time that children spend being physically active. And the PE teachers need to have regular professional development just like other subjects. PE teachers also can encourage out-of-class physical activity that we know can spawn an interest in joining an after-school program. But they tend not to do that, and it's something that's very hard to move. In recess, we need to have more adult monitoring to ensure that children are being active, and while they are in recess, have equipment available, have access to balls and other gear. And in some of these urban environments, or really any environment where there's a lot of blacktop, they can paint games like Foursquare and Hopscotch and those have been shown. I think a group in San Diego showed that actually is successful in getting kids to be more active. Before and after school programs, there can be open gyms, more intramural programs, transportation to community programs that are already out there that are waiting for the kids to come in and join their programs. And finally, active transport to school. We need more policies and programs at the school level as well as at the state and district level. Two programs out there right now, one is at the national level, is the Safe Routes to Schools program that is sponsored by the one of the transportation bills. And that's enacted in all 50 states now. Another is the walking school bus, which is more of a grassroots effort from parents and other adults to meet at street corners and walk children into school. These programs haven't been well evaluated, but they definitely have face value of getting more children to walk and bike to school. Finally, I'm just going to turn for a second to youth sports. 30 to 40 million children a year are involved in sports. Well, why do they do that? They want to have fun. They want to do something that they're good at, to be part of a team, to have some challenge, learn new skills. But unfortunately, children quit a lot. Why do they quit? Well, some of the things are things we really can't do anything about. You know, they might need more time to study. They want to do other things. But some of the reasons that have been shown that why they quit are really programmatic related of coaches playing favorites, being a poor teacher, too much emphasis on winning. These are things that programmatically can be changed to be able to keep children in sports longer. The data show that children that are involved in sports are more active than those who are not. So what can be done? Again, we can continue better coaching and coaching development so that the coaches are trained to emphasize having fun, learning skills, letting all players play, and less emphasis on competition that a lot of the kids aren't there to play for. Parents need to be involved with their children, but not to the point of discouraging the physical activity and the fun that can be happening in sports because of too much competition.
So Debbie, you know that one of the hot topics in this field right now is the hypothesized effects of physical activity and physical education specifically on academic achievement and learning. What's your assessment of that relationship?
Well, when I was preparing for this session here, I started to look at the literature that's out there with physical activity and academic achievement, and I just wasn't impressed with the strength of the literature at this point, and so I just decided not to talk about it.
Yeah, I think the literature is developing rapidly, and I think in the not distant future, maybe within a 5-year horizon, we'll probably be a lot more confident of that relationship. But there's certainly a lot of interest in it, and very important topic, and from a policy perspective, I think one that has huge implications for attempts to promote physical activity during the school day.
No, I was thinking the same. The policy ramifications are huge, so I guess I'm hopeful that the science will improve and that we'll have a more solid scientific grounds to stand on that really support the necessity to a certain extent of physical activity and PE. You know, it's been used, the need for children to be achieving certain levels in school has been used as a rationale for eliminating recess and PE. So this evidence, you know, could really speak against such strategies.
Agreed.
There have been some interesting, I think really preliminary work looking at cognitive development in kids who are more physically active and the development of executive function. Mm-hmm. And it's, I think at this point it's all cross-sectional, but it's very intriguing that could lead to why if there is some benefit for academic achievement.
Right.
I'm encouraged also that the methods in neuroscience are developing so rapidly that it's going to be possible to study this issue, the effects of physical activity in kids on cognition in sort of remarkably precise ways. You know, Debbie, you alluded to the challenges around physical education programs in schools. What would be your priorities? We all know there have been longstanding efforts to strengthen physical education programs in schools, and not the kind of progress that we would all like to see. I mean, what do you think needs to happen?
I would really hope that schools stop eliminating PE. I think that is the first stopgap measure that needs to happen. I think the second is that for the PE teachers to get the respect that the math teachers do, and that physical education is just as important as a subject. Third is having schools meet the guidelines, and the data that I showed was from 2006. And do you have any updates of what's been going on with getting more PE in the schools instead of twice a week, maybe three times a week if you're lucky.
You've noted that the disparity between the guidelines and the state regulations and actual practice.
Right.
I mean, there are huge disparities across all of those. And there have been very interesting legal challenges in the state of California in recent years that really are aimed at closing that disparity between what the state law says is supposed to be happening in the schools and what's actually happening. And so, I think I'm encouraged that maybe we're beginning to take this issue seriously. And you know, we all know the schools have challenges with funding, and there's only so much time during the school day. But, you know, if the law says that something is supposed to be happening, then I think we can expect it to happen. And, I'm encouraged that that there have been some legal challenges, and I think it may take that to really enable the schools to find the resources to be compliant with state regulations. You know, I think we should turn next to Kirsten Davidson, who's going to talk to us about promoting physical activity through the home environment.
Right. So, in addition to the importance setting of the school, families really play a large role in terms of physical activity. Children develop certain fundamental motor skills in the early years of life. Parents really have the ability to expose children to certain environments, which then lead to an interest in physical activity, an involvement in physical activity and so forth. So there's a relatively large body of literature on this, and there's been about four review articles put out in the past 5 years. And sort of some of the key findings on ways in which families can influence children's physical activity really revolve around co-participation. This is when parents are actually doing things, activities with their children. They include their children in their activities. And this is different from simply modeling physical activity. We hear about this a lot, but the evidence is really pretty mixed on this, and I think mainly because it's just not clear if children see this. This could happen outside of the purview of children and so forth. Another one is really, as I had mentioned before, facilitating involvement or creating opportunities. So this is enrolling children in sports, taking them to playgrounds, and really creating a world for them that can include physical activity. And this is actually where we see probably the most solid, consistent evidence is on this particular strategy that parents can use. Encouraging children, of course, verbal encouragement, praise. And the last one, as was someone mentioned before, and children's enjoyment is important in predicting their physical activity. It's actually parents' enjoyment is probably, if I had to throw a whole bunch of parent variables into a model, that would be the one that would come out and explain the greatest likelihood of whether children actually are involved in physical activity. So what people haven't really considered too much is really what comes first. So we talk about the benefits of parental support, but the role that the child played doesn't tend to come into this discussion. So, and there are a limited number of studies, but they're out there, that really suggest that parents respond to their children. So it turns out that parents are actually most likely to provide support to children who perceive themselves as being athletically competent and so forth. And are interested in physical activity. So they are the children that ask their parents to be involved and so forth. What's really interesting about this is that it's actually the children who don't ask that turns out that they're the ones that tend to need it most and benefit the most from parental support. So I think the message here is that parents need to encourage physical activity in all children. And there could be different strategies one takes depending on your children's interests and confidence level and so forth, but it's important to encourage in all children. So another question that's really come up is really, what role do mothers and versus fathers play? And a common question is, is one more important than the other? Do we need both? And so forth. Again, here I think the evidence is pretty mixed. But what we do see is that mothers and fathers tend to adopt slightly different strategies. The mothers are more likely to be, for want of a better word, the soccer moms. They're the ones that arrange the activities for the children and do the facilitation that I was talking about before. And the fathers are more likely to be the co-participators. So we could all probably recall stories of our dad hitting around the baseball with us in the backyard. I can think of many examples of that. So they do take different approaches. I've seen this pretty consistently in a variety of studies with different age groups and of children and so forth. But what we do know is that it seems that either one of these approaches works. It's not as though one is more important than the other, that both of these strategies are actually are linked with higher physical activity in children. So I think this is important because the message here is that parents can adopt strategies with which they're most comfortable. They don't have to go out of their comfort zone, but they can find a strategy that's going to work for them. So another area which I think is really interesting is, you know, the question of can parental support ever take a negative, you know, tone to it? I think we generally assume that parental support is a good thing and that everybody should be encouraging their children to be active, and I definitely would promote that. But there's a but that comes in here. There is some evidence that when their physical activity is really encouraged with an emphasis on weight loss, so the purpose of the child being physically active is to promote weight loss or weight management and so forth. This is a direct relationship, like the mother, the parent is talking to the child about strategies to lose weight, maintain weight, and ensuring that their child is active to achieve these kinds of goals. The limited research on this suggests that this may backfire. And that in a study I was looking at in adolescent girls that were followed between the ages of 9 and 15 years, it seemed that the girls whose parents adopted this kind of strategy reported higher concern about weight across time, less enjoyment of physical activity. They actually reported more rapid increases in body weight, and yet we saw no differences in physical activity. So the one thing that the parents are really trying to affect was the one thing that they didn't. So I think we need to be cautious of the tone and the messages that really come with the support that we provide our children. So overall, to pull this all together, a number of real key recommendations, I think, for parents are to make physical activity sort of a family mindset that, you know, of course we're going to walk to the store that's half a mile down the road to get our groceries. Why would we get in the car to do an activity like that? Once again, connect children with opportunities to be active and to start this actually at a young age. So this is really important. Be sensitive to children's preferences and their comfort levels around physical activity. As I mentioned, the children who really don't perceive themselves as being athletic and so forth are the least likely to come forward. But they may require a slightly softer approach. They might be very weary of a group sport, and maybe we need to start with something more individual that might cater to their needs, at least initially. I think parents need to include children when they do something active rather than making their physical activity something that happens separate from the family unit. So I think these are a number of very concrete, doable strategies that parents can really focus on to try and facilitate active lifestyles at a young age in kids. So this really sort of rolls into, clearly it makes a lot of sense to intervene with families, that they play such a big role in shaping preferences and activity patterns that we need to develop effective programs that really center around the family. The challenge here is that we really haven't done a good job in this area. There's a real mixture of findings. The kinds of strategies that have been used so far in interventions include things like parent and family counseling, teaching families how to set goals around physical activity and to monitor those kinds of goals, calling parents on a regular basis and adopting strategies of like motivational interviewing and so forth to try and keep up their motivation interest levels in encouraging this in the family, family workshops and family fun nights, and sending materials home with children. So these are all, when you think about it, these are all relatively passive strategies that occur outside of the family context. There's very little that we're actually seeing that delves into the family itself and the fundamental sort of interactions that are going on there. So with all of this in mind, I personally think we need a slightly different approach. I think that we're exhausted our little toolkit of, relatively straightforward approaches. I think we need to think outside the box a little on this one. So a couple of things I advocate for is, one of which is that to really understand the fundamentals of families, we need to go back and understand the family unit. So I think there's a whole literature out there on child development, family development, that rarely do you ever see in the physical activity field. I think there's a lot that can be gained there. Another thing is that I think that too many assumptions are made about families. So we dive right in there with our, you know, assessments and so forth without having sort of initially had conversations with parents and begun what's called a qualitative manner to ask them what the issues are and so forth, and then build your way up from that. I think that's a strategy we need to adopt more often, at least in our research. And then the final thing, I think pulling it all together, when we develop programs, I think we need to really give parents a fundamental say in what goes on in these programs. And this will help really build the programs into sort of their daily realities. What are the other things they're trying to manage? What are they most interested in? What makes the most sense to them? I think that once we start using these kinds of strategies, we're going to see parents, you know, engaging more. I think this is the biggest challenge overall, is getting parents, particularly parents with young children, to engage in these kinds of programs. There's not necessarily any research that backs this up at this point. This is just a direction that I think we really need to be heading. So turning quickly, sort of the flip side of all of this is children's television viewing. And the guidelines by the American Academy of Pediatrics were actually just updated in the past week or so. And I actually had to go and change my slides as a result. So the general recommendations are that to limit children's television viewing or screen behaviors to 1 to 2 hours of quality viewing a day, and discourage parents from putting televisions into children's bedrooms. Previously, I think the terminology was to take the TV out. And I think we've realized that that's actually a really difficult thing to do, that once the TV goes into the bedroom, it's actually very difficult to get it out again. And the reason this is a problem is that kids with televisions in their bedroom watch more television, markedly more television. And to generally discourage television viewing in children under age 2. But despite all these recommendations, we see that children in the U.S. really are not, as with physical activity, not even coming close to these recommendations. More than half of children exceed these recommendations, and I'm seeing more and more in studies that up to 75% of children at times, depending on the groups that I'm working with, actually have a television in the bedroom. And you may have five children, each of which might have a television in the bedroom. So in terms of pulling it together, general recommendations for families, one of which is to monitor how much time children watch TV. You'd be surprised when you talk to parents how uncommon it is that parents actually keep track of how much time children are spending with screens. To practice selective viewing, this could be one approach to reducing levels of physical activity. This is around the idea of media literacy, so be planful in your viewing. This is a show I want to watch, and it's at this time and for the child as well, and then plan accordingly rather than having the television on for long periods of time. Avoid giving children snacks while watching TV. This is sort of not necessarily connected to physical activity, but it's one of the mechanisms that may explain a lot of the other negative health effects linked with this. And of course, avoid putting televisions in children's bedrooms.
You've alluded to the challenges that we have in terms of communicating with parents and helping them modify their parenting behaviors mm-hmm. around physical activity and sedentary behavior. Many of the viewers of this program are going to be healthcare providers who themselves do often deal directly right. with the parents of the kids they're serving. What would your advice be to healthcare providers?
Well, one of the recommendations that are coming out for healthcare providers and actually is in the most recent guidelines is to begin this conversation early with parents, with infants and so forth. I think there's really evidence coming out that suggests that things that are thought of as educational really aren't educational for children. And making parents aware of this early on before certain behavioral patterns are established in kids that are very, very difficult to change. I think we need to adopt a realistic approach on working with parents. And again, I think this is around the strategy of encouraging parents to be planful, to pick times and so forth, rather than just, you know, alluding to the possibility that they're neglecting their children by having the television on. I don't think this kind of strategy is going to be taken very well by parents, and understandably so.
You talked about interventions that haven't worked, mm-hmm. and some of that have really been school-based interventions in which they've tried right. to reach out to the parents by having a family fun night mm-hmm. or putting something home, taking something right. home. And I was struck by what you said about how we don't understand how the family dynamics. Mm-hmm. And I would like to follow up with the new model, because I so much agree with you, is that we need to take an interdisciplinary approach and not assume that if we understand physical activity, we understand families. Or we might understand our family, but that's not everyone else's family. So talk about that a little bit more.
Well, I also think, sort of along those lines, that we need to go to the place where families are. And schools were, you know, it has been, as you mentioned, sort of the primary place of that. But actually, parents don't spend a lot of time in schools these days, especially with school buses coming in at younger ages. But they are using programs, healthcare clinics and so forth, WIC. There's home visitation programs where that these might be ways to which we can connect with them in their space. I think we also need to cater to the other needs of the family. So, as I mentioned, a family that is in distress, the mother might be experiencing depression, she may be a single mom, she's juggling many things, to come in over the top of that and say, you need to regulate how much TV you watch, and by the way, send your child outside, is going to fly right over their heads. So I think more of a holistic approach working with parents is really necessary. You need to deal with some of these bigger issues before we start really bringing in they're going to be necessary to deal with some of those things before we can expect that parents are going to be mindful enough around parenting to really think about some of the strategies they're using with their children.
So Debbie suggested that there, you know, we've attempted to reach out to parents from the schools. I wonder if we could work the other direction as well, and maybe be more effective in the end in promoting physical activity in kids by encouraging parents to be a little more intense in their relationship with the schools that their children attend.
I agree. I mean, there's so many benefits for this on many dimensions, including children's educational outcomes. I think, to my knowledge, parent involvement is one of the best predictors of child educational outcomes. So the more we can integrate families into activities that are going on to schools, the more ability we have to work holistically with parents and schools and children at the same time.
So both schools and homes obviously exist in the context of communities, and I wonder what each of you think about how we could do better to connect community resources to either the schools or homes and parents for the purpose of promoting activity in kids.
Now, you know, it's interesting that you bring that up, because that's what we tried to do with the trial of activity for adolescent girls. And when we did our initial work, our formative assessment work, and went out to the school, went out to the community programs, they were dying to get the kids into schools. And it's like there's this tall fence that schools and communities, and they just don't talk with each other. And that's what we tried to do. And it's time consuming, and it's breaking down those barriers. You know, it would be nice if we could get schools to use an after school bus to drop off, you know, a number of kids at a certain physical activity program, the Tai Chi place or the Boys and Girls Club. I mean, that just doesn't seem like that's that hard to do. But it seems like it's a policy. You know, that's a policy change of on the way to the bus stop, you know, one of the bus stops is, you know, the Taekwondo shop, and 20 kids get off there.
I actually probably the place where you're most likely to see good connections between communities and schools and so forth is when you have smaller schools that are directly located in the residential communities. So you've basically got your school, you've got your families tightly clustered around this, and that becomes a community. I think the interplay becomes a lot stronger in that case. And there's a direct reason for parents to advocate for positive school policies or aspects of the community that really need to be put in place. For example, I've just moved into a new community, and I was really surprised to see, actually most children walk to school in this particular urban area. Come 7:30 in the morning, you see traffic officers at every intersection. That really struck me. You essentially don't bother getting in your car at that time of day because the streets are basically shut down for the children to walk to school. And, you know, I wonder how that came about, you know, whether it's through advocacy or someone in a high place obviously caring about this a lot. But these things are important, definitely.
Yeah, I think we do have a lot of work to do to bring down the barriers that really don't need to exist but often are there, and that have the effect of, keeping kids from having access to physical activity resources. there is a trend that I'm encouraged about in supporting development of joint use agreements between school districts and recreation commissions, and just so often in this country we've allowed those to operate in kind of separate spheres, and it's not a good use of public resources to put those walls up. And I'm encouraged that there is a trend in the direction of trying to develop those joint use agreements really as the norm rather than the exception that they tend to be in this country now.
Yeah, and just opening up schools, even if it's just opening up the outside of schools, that so the community can use the tennis courts and the jogging track.
We see this in the place of walking programs in older populations, being in school buildings and school halls and things, particularly in rural areas. This seems to have been very important.
You know, and because so much of the audience for this program, I think, will be healthcare providers, I'd also like to take the opportunity to say that folks in the health professions, I think, can be very influential in their communities, and that includes the interactions that they can have with the schools and the school districts. And healthcare providers tend to be very respected and influential spokespersons for issues that impact the health of children, and I would certainly love to see even more healthcare providers than have done it so far be outspoken advocates for initiatives that would promote physical activity in kids. I know that most healthcare providers that work with kids are very concerned about these issues, but particularly childhood obesity, and I think sometimes are frustrated that it's a difficult challenge to figure out how to address. I just encourage healthcare providers of all kinds to call the school district, call the school board, call the recreation commission, call the county council, and advocate for initiatives that will promote physical activity in kids.
I agree.
Well, I'd like to thank my colleagues, Debbie Rome Young and Kirsten Davidson, for joining me in this program. I'd also like to thank you, the audience, for tuning in. Please complete the post-test in order to earn credit for this program. And remember, this is one of many programs in our curriculum, so please check Medscape often to continue to participate in the Children's Health, Fitness, and Nutrition Initiative.
Thank you for listening to this excerpt of the CME activity, Turn Off the TV, Get Outside and Play, Physical Activity as a Lifestyle. To participate in the CME activity, please go to medscape.org/features/audio and select the title.